So the case we're talking about, really, if you look at vignette number one, basically as follows. You have an employer and employee. Everybody's honest. Everybody is trying their best to do what they agreed to do. And the employee comes to work, shows up, maybe even starts doing his job. And all of a sudden, it no longer is relevant to finish the job, either because, you know, weather prevented him from finishing, or because his job is no longer necessary for circumstances unforeseen by both parties. And the question is, essentially, in such a case, ones, an extenuating circumstance preventing the agreement from going forward as planned. So the question we started discussing last time is, who is liable? Does the employee get paid? Does he not get paid? And what does that depend on? So before we get back into it, I actually like to pose this question to the crowd. What would you say? All things being considered, nobody specifically was meant to be negligent in preventing the employee from doing his job, but it couldn't happen. Should the employee get paid? You know, he started, but he couldn't finish the job. What would you say?
Is it January?
So you're saying with the snowstorm. So one factor I Torchino is mentioning is maybe it depends on was this circumstance foreseeable. Yeah.
In many contracts, you have an exclusion for an act of God.
Right.
That you're not responsible if an act of God will change the playing field.
The employer and the employee is not responsible.
In general, a lot of contracts have that as their part of their boilerplate.
Okay, so the question.
They didn't have one here.
Right, so the question is in lieu of.
No, the question is still, do you pass like a Rambam defining act?
No, but you see, there's such a concept. There's such a concept in development.
Right.
Okay.
Right. So the question would be in lieu of an actual contract.
That would seem to suggest the workers do not get paid.
Right. It would seem to. But the fact, as pointed out, it is written, but you see, there is this.
Right.
They got the source from the Gemara.
So the question is, if you don't have a contract. Okay. So last week so it's an open question. I would argue that part of the fundamental question here, which is a pretty fundamental question, is what does an employee need to do to get paid? Is payment contingent upon actually completing the job or participating in the job? Is showing up to work and being prepared to do the job and doing due diligence sufficient to warrant getting paid? That's part of the question here. And also, a second question would be, what cases is an employer absolved from payment? Meaning, even if you theoretically did enough to get paid, but there's nothing I could have done. Maybe I'm absolved from payment. So last time, we discussed a few of the cases of the Gemara. We're not going to go back into those inside, but I did make a chart for you at the bottom of your first source sheet and the top of the second. I'll just go through that quickly. So, first case we had in the Gemara is the case of digging ditches, where the employer hires these workers to dig ditches for him in his field, and then unfortunately it rains and it is no longer practical to perform that job. The Gemara says as follows. If you look at where it says ruling in that column, if the employer showed, according to most Mefarshim, showed the employees, the workers, the field the night before, then when it then rains the next day and they cannot perform their job, then he is absolved from paying them. He does not need to pay them. If he did not specifically do that, if he didn't show them the field the night before, then even though this is not his fault that it rained, he still needs to pay them. That was case number one. Okay. Case two and three are the same case, just different ones, different extenuating circumstance. And it's a bit different than case one in that here, instead of the job being impossible to complete, it's no longer necessary to complete. Okay? And so in this case, he was hired these workers to irrigate his field, and then all of a sudden, in case number two, it rains. And the Gemara says, well, you know what? He couldn't have stopped it from raining. It's not his fault. The workers don't get paid. However, if it was a river that irrigated the field and it wasn't the rain, then he actually has to pay the workers even though they didn't even do anything. It was all the river. Okay. Case number four is different than case one only in that the extenuating circumstance, the ones, takes place in the middle of the day. Okay, so again, here they're hired to irrigate the field and the river dries up in the middle of the day and they no longer can irrigate the field. So what about the second half of the day's salary? Do they get that? And here the Gemara has a few different circumstances, and this, which points us to the general criteria the Gemara is focusing on here. So it depends. If it dries up irregularly, this is not something that the employer could have foreseen, so then he is absolved from paying them. He does not need to pay them. He cannot have foreseen that. Even if it dries up regularly, this is something that does happen often, it still depends. If the employees are from that town, and this is according to the way most Mefarshim interpret the Gemara, as opposed to the Rambam, who I'm not going to discuss right now. I guess see last week's Chabura for that. So if it dries up regularly, and the workers are from that town, and they could have foreseen that this might have happened, then still, they don't get paid. However, if they could not have foreseen that this would have happened, and this happens regularly, then they still get paid again, even though the second half of the day, their labor was not necessary. And then finally, in the last case, which is not really an extenuating circumstance, just sort of another occurrence where their job cannot be completed as normal or does not need the same amount of time, they complete their job early in the day, right? So the workers finished, were supposed to work till 5 o'clock, they finish at 12 o'clock. So now what do they do? So the Gemara says that the employer, interestingly, has the right to assign them another task if he has an equivalent task to give them. Equivalent meaning the same amount of physical labor is necessary. However, if he has no physical task that is equivalent to the one he originally assigned them, so then they can sort of not work the rest of the day and get paid their full salary. That is the Gemara that we learned last time. So, based on these cases, if you look at the chart, can we come up with a general rule? Meaning all things being equal. We have one of these extenuating circumstances, an onus, and the job will not be completed. Do the employees get paid? Are they entitled to get paid? Or do we say generally it is upon the employer, rather the employer is absolved from paying them because they didn't do their job? Well, it's a bit hard. You know, you have both conclusions. There's one. If you look at the chart, you just tally it up. There's one more occurrence where the workers lose out, but that doesn't really suggest a general ruling. So, any thoughts? Ali, you seem like you're.
If everyone did their job right, then the employees lose out. That's what it seems to me.
Why? Just curious.
Why?
Because you looked in the last sources, or because. Okay, so that's a good svara. So you're saying it would make sense that Hamotz Mechaver Lavaraya generally. Rather than making people pay, making the employer pay, you have to keep things where they are. If both parties are equally liable or not liable, or negligent or not negligent, then why should he pay? Okay, yeah, Tommy.
It just also depends on how much awareness they have.
Depends on the awareness.
Yeah.
Okay, but the question is going to be...
The land, and whether they're citizens of the area or whatever.
Right, so you see that those are relevant, yeah.
Haven't we said before that the Poalim have an extra sentiment in their favor?
Right.
So it should, if you can't make up your mind, there's arguments on both sides, you should give them some extra.
You're saying Yad Poal Al Yona. Interesting. Yeah. So that is a relevant factor. I hear that. It might also depend on, how we view, as we sort of mentioned last week, you know, they started or they walked to the place where the job was supposed to take place. Just how much of an upper hand does that give them? Do we view this as sort of a case where somebody is asking money from someone else, or do we say no? It's sort of like a case where a kinyan was made. You know, it's almost like I paid money for it to purchase an object, and then all of a sudden the object, you know, cannot be delivered to me. Right, so I went to your field, and we made that kinyan, we made this agreement, and now you can't come through on your agreement to pay me. So that being said, if you look at the second page, if you look at source number 5 and 6, the Mefarshim generally understand that indeed the employer has the upper hand, that all things being equal. It is upon the employees to prove that they were wrong, and if they were not, even if it was no one's fault, the worker says, "What do you mean? I came to the job. I'm ready to do the work." And the employer says, "But it's not my fault that so and so happened and it rained." All things being equal, they will not get paid.
Yeah, however, it's based on the Matzi Lechaber Halav Araya. I assume that if the employee was paid in advance.
Good point. Interesting. We'll get to that in just 1 minute. Actually, in this case, the Aruch HaShulchan tells us explicitly that that is not the case.
Really?
That and even if it is, it's not because what we're asking is, well, if they got paid already, then you don't have to change the status quo to let them continue to get paid. So I didn't see any Mefarshim that say that the reason that if they get paid already up front, they don't have to return the money is because we just keep things where they are in these type of cases. There is another idea, which is that if you pay them up front, you're sort of acknowledging that, well, I'm going to pay you, even though it could be that I won't need your work anyway. That's sort of like an extra acknowledgement. By paying them up front, you're saying, well, I'm going to pay you, and even though something might happen in the future, but here's your salary.
But we do have a concept of tafsin lo matkina, right?
Right.
So why isn't that?
Right, so that would be usually in a case of suffik, right? That's what the distinction here is, that usually when we say motzei mechaver al varaya, so that what that means, as we'll see in a second, is that we don't know who to give it to, and therefore, okay, so let's keep things where they are, because they each have equal arguments. Here, it's not that we don't know, it's that we know. They're, but in a case in which each of them were either negligent or not negligent, so the halacha is that the employer doesn't have to pay. It's not that we don't know, it's that that's the halacha. The halacha is we're giving it to the employer. Right? It's not a case of suffix. So if you and if you look at source number 5 and 6, they both do invoke Hamotz Mechavel Avarai, but they add another line also. Look at the rush here. He proves it from the case number four. So the case is you hired workers to water your field, irrigate your field, and the river ceased to flow in the middle of the day. It says, Ilohav Arogel de Pasik Pse de Polim. If this is an irregular occurrence, so then the workers lose out. Any ones, any extenuating circumstance which neither of them could have foreseen, or they both could have foreseen, meaning both of them could have said, well, this might happen, and therefore this is what happens in that situation, but neither did. So, say to the polim, the workers lose out. All things be equal, the workers lose out. Dhamotze mechavero, alav haraya, biyadu al tatona. Right? That one who wants to make his friend pay money, so he has to prove that he was wronged, he's entitled to it. And also, yadu al tatona. Generally, the worker has the lower hand in this case. Right? If you're trying to make someone pay, you have the lower hand. Then Muki Yosef says pretty similarly. I'll just read the. He actually proves it from another case, which is the first case, that in a case where you warn the workers in advance, or you show the workers the field in advance, so then you do not have to pay them even if it rains. He says, "Say the polim hagashamim shayordu hefset polim hu." The rains that the fell result in a loss for the workers. The yav lumidi doesn't pay them anything. The omer lahem mazalchem garan, that he can say to them, it was your bad mazel, it was your bad luck that it rains. V'shamina mehacha dechol milsa shehu pshias tetravayu yad poel al tachtona. That we learn from here that any case in which they were both negligent, then the workers have the lower hand. Dehacha demishom sheyadu polen diasi mitche belela yochaz lemerka balamachar. Lo asnu aminon inu dasidon ashayu. Now here in this case, the reason the poalim lose out is because they should have foreseen that it might have rained that night and known that if it does rain, it's not worth their while to come to work. And they should have said, you know, well, if it rains, either we're not coming, or even if we come, we're going to get paid. They should have stipulated that. They should have foreseen this occurrence. And they didn't do that. And therefore, they lose out. Third line, v'halo balabayas gamkin yadazet. Didn't the employer also know that it could have rained the next day? Couldn't he have said, oh, and by the way, if it rains tomorrow, don't come, and if you do come, I'm not going to pay you? Couldn't he have said that? He didn't. So he's also negligent. But we still side with the employer, despite the fact they were both equally negligent and aware that it could have rained, preventing them from fulfilling their promises to each other to go through this employment agreement. Rather, since the worker is coming to take out money from the balabayas, from the employer, he has the lower hand. He actually proves it again from another case, which we're not going to get to today, which is a case where the employee's personal circumstances which prevent him from completing a job. And he says, based on the Gemara, the employee will only get paid for the work that he did. But if you get sick and you can't finish a job, so then you don't get paid for the work you did do. We don't say, well, you were sick, it's not your fault, and therefore, I'm sorry, and therefore, I'm going to have to pay you anyway. We say, no, you know, you were sick, it's not your fault, you don't have to pay me anything, but you're not getting paid. So that is the general rule that the Mefarshim say in this case, the employer has the upper hand. Now, one case does seem to stand out in this regard from our cases. I'm actually wondering, if you look at cases 1 through 5, which would you say would actually seem to imply that the employees have the upper hand? That the employer has to go out of his or her way to ensure that he is not held liable?
Digging ditches, he had to.
The first one, exactly. Right, this first case seems to put a lot of an onus, no pun intended, on the employer, right? You have to go out of your way and specifically bring the workers to your field and show them the field. And only if you do that are you prevented from having to pay them when it rains. So why is that? So the Rush here, as the one who just said the employers usually have the upper hand, explains this, and he has two different explanations. He says, if you look at source number 7, the fisha ba'abayet makiret art. So the employer recognizes his field. That he knows that if it rains, it's not worth working. It's not worth digging ditches. He should have told the polim in the morning, don't come to work today. Go find another job, because I know that since it rained, it's not worth even coming. But the workers don't know, meaning this isn't a situation in which they both could have realized that it's not worth coming to work. They thought maybe that it's the type of field, apparently such a field exists, where even though it's raining, it's not so moist, and you could still work the land. They wouldn't have known. So essentially, the Baal Bayit was negligent in not informing them.
Does he have to first explain his land or just show them? By the way, this is a weak area of my land. You should know that it's.
Sounds like he has to show them. They should have the ability to decide for themselves once he shows them.
It's actually just the opposite. Meaning we're not requiring them to explain.
Right, I'll get it.
Explaining would be even better than taking them to see the land.
Right.
He doesn't even have to bring them. He has to show you, tell them you can come to my place. He doesn't have to bring them. Right? I'm available, come tomorrow.
No, but if at negotiation time he said to the workers, you should know if it rains, this feels toast. He doesn't have to take them to see it.
Yeah, that for sure would be good.
Okay, but I'm saying, does he have to go that far? Or does he just have to say, listen, come to my land and look at it yourselves? You guys determine it.
Right.
Well,
no,
who's going to confirm that actually happened, practically speaking?
You might need witnesses.
Security
cameras.
Exactly. Okay. Saying,
well,
that may be his reason for accompanying them.
No, but you're imputing dishonesty.
Yeah, I mean, we're assuming that everyone's straight.
Well, I think we are assuming everybody's going to be honest. It's just a question of who's responsible.
Right.
Just going back to the Mukhi Yosef. The Mukhi Yosef seems to be talking about this first case.
Yeah.
So how could you possibly explain that?
He thought the opposite. He says that since the only reason that the Baal HaBayit would have to pay is because he specifically didn't tell them. But even when he does tell them, his argument is, well, look, I told you it might rain tonight. And if it rains, then it's not worth coming to work. But the point he's saying is that nevertheless, even though that's true, you're asking why would you?
It's not approved of what he's saying and brings it as a proof.
I guess I think his point is actually the point that was just made, which is that the case is not that he tells them not to come. The case is he just shows them the land. This is basically to Rabbi Tortina's point. I think this is actually the point. He doesn't tell them, oh, guys, don't come to work tomorrow if it rains. He doesn't do that. He just shows them the land.
Right.
And then they're both equally knowledgeable about the situation. They both know that, oh, like, if it does rain, it might not be worth coming. But neither of them says, and if you come, X, Y, and Z will happen. Neither of them says anything. They just are both equally aware of the situation. And yet, we still hold the employees responsible, meaning they don't get paid. I think that must be his proof. Yeah.
I think what I would do, and I just want, is this unusual to say guys, Rain, we don't need you now, but I guarantee you the next time that we need it, I'm going to call you.
Their response will be, great, then the next time that happens, I'll be able to eat lunch.
If it rains again, fine.
Okay. But I need to lunch today.
Right.
No, but shouldn't this be part of the discussion? That this is a way of dealing with this that is not mentioned at all. To say, okay, there was this act of God this time, but next time I need you guys, I guarantee you I'm going to call you or something. Why are we so just focusing on now and giving them complete sloughing off? Whether it's Oyoina, Tachtoina, there is a way of...
For next time?
What?
Well, I guess one question is that... Who's...
Like, I'm going to need it again. It doesn't rain all the time. It's not the mud hole, you know what I mean?
I think the point is that since they are hired workers and they wanted to get paid today... I lost a day of work. Good. Or, you know, I came to the job. That brings something with it. That's an agreement. How are you not going to pay me?
Yes, if you focus like that. But
I think you're right. I think it would be equitable and honest for them to do that. But this is just a simple case where they just agree to, you know, agree.
Well, at least they can say that. Give them the opportunity.
But I think the idea is that these are people who are living paycheck. They don't go to work today, they're not getting lunch. Oh, it's great today, I have a business prospect in the future, but it doesn't...
How about really... it beats nothing?
Or they could say back to you, pay us today, and next time...
So I think your point would be...
For free. Will you take that?
So,
maybe?
That's a possibility.
Right, one point we're making, which is a good one, is that, maybe we should at least require the employer to say, okay, like today I couldn't pay you, but since we agreed that you would work for me, here is tomorrow's job. Like, okay, I think it's sort of what you're asking?
That's what I'm saying.
And it would seem that it might make a difference, and we'll see that. Right, so we'll see. I think in our next discussion, that is a relevant thing. But in terms of this specific discussion, the agreement was today. Like this, we're talking here in this case more about a scherion, which is interesting to point out. I wanted to get that in a minute, but we're talking about a daily worker.
You're sitting in the basement. The basement has to make a decision. They're not
right,
saying,
right. So,
work it out. You went out, you tried to work it out, nobody agreed.
So right. So, and I hired you for Tuesday. If I hire you for Tuesday...
The first right of... In law, there's a thing about first right of refusal. That one of the ways of resolving stuff is I give you a first right of refusal. That is a methodology.
Okay.
Fundamentally, one thing that you have to remember here is that this is still an adversarial relationship. Meaning, we're all good citizens, we all want everybody to do well, but at the end of the day, this is adversarial. In the same way I was thinking of as we were talking about the case in which he just shows them the field, he doesn't explain anything, and they're supposed to figure it out. What if you hire a novice worker? You bring him to look at the field, he looks at it, he says, yep, that's a field. And he doesn't know anything about it, he doesn't understand the impact of rain.
Field.
But on the other hand, right, even though we said in the opening shiurim that purchases are not the same thing as workers, nonetheless, if I sell somebody something and I give him every opportunity to investigate it and he happens to not know what he's doing and he doesn't get expert advice, I am not responsible to disclose things that you don't normally disclose in a sale. It's not it's not my job.
If he's a worker, you should learn what workers are supposed to know.
Yeah. Exactly.
Right? That's how
you learn. Just to know
the price.
Yeah.
Then he would be in business.
That now he knows.
Okay, I'll hear for next time. So just to note, because I want to move on to a sort of conflicting Gemara, just to know, if you look at source 7, the Rush does give a different explanation as to why the employer must show the employee the field. He says that, well, who says that the employee can say, well, maybe you just agreed to that I would work for you and water your field or irrigate your field or whatever the work was. Well, who says it was this field? You know, we made an agreement, I'm going to work for you. So give me a field and I'm happy to work for you. Why do you get to say, well, this is the field I meant? And you know, sorry, it's too late. No, give me another field. I'm here to work. I did my job. But if you show him the field the night before and you say, no, this is the field. Like, this is what I'm hiring you to do. You know, or this is the only property that I have. Then he can't make that claim. Now, which is an interesting one, an interesting discussion, which is... posed here is that does the worker have the right ever to say, you know, like, I know I couldn't do job X, but I'm here, give me job Y, and you can pay me for that. And it seems, actually, that most postcoms say no. I mean, that if I give you a specific job, that might have been the job I wanted you to do for me. It doesn't mean that, you know, oh, I'm happy. Whatever work you do is fine. Like, if I hired you to mow my lawn, you offer, well, I'll wash the floors. Okay, but I didn't want you to wash the floors. And I don't have necessarily a responsibility to allow you to do that. So that is, nevertheless, the conclusion from this Gemara, according to Moshe Farshim, is that, indeed, the employer has the upper hand. However, there is another Gemara which has a different sort of conclusion. I have to really sort of pay careful attention to the specifics here, but if you look at source number 8, this is a Gemara in Bava Metzia, Ayin Tes Amud Aleph. So the Gemara says as follows. So Tana Rabbanan. Okay, so a person hires a boat, and not just a boat, but someone's going to drive the boat, presumably, and it sinks halfway. Okay, so he's on a voyage, and all of a sudden, in the middle of the voyage, some sort of storm happens. No one could have foreseen it. Horrific circumstance. Thankfully, everyone's okay, but the ship sinks, and the cargo is lost. So what do we do? So Rav Nosson Omar, Omer, Natan lo yitol, v'lo Natan lo yitain. Rav Nosson says, so, if you already gave him the money, you can't take it back. But if you did not give him the money, don't give it. Sort of sounds like from the Gemara, first statement, keep things where they are. Whatever the status quo is, that's the way it goes. Okay. So Omar says, really? Hechidami, what case are we talking about? So Ilima b'sfinazu v'yayin stam. So if the case was as follows, it was specified that it's this boat, meaning taking a step back here, essentially here, the person who owns the boat is the worker, and the renter is the employer, right? He's the one renting the boat, the socher is the employer. So if the socher said, I am renting this boat, right, the SS Toronto, that is the boat that we're going to use today, and on the SS Toronto, I'm hiring you to bring cargo. I don't specify which cargo. Okay, I'm telling you, you're gonna bring wine. So imnasan amaloyito, if he gave him the money, so why can't he take it back? Nemale havli svinta the anamaisina chamra. Right, you could say to him, look, okay, I am ready for you to do the job for me. Right, I didn't do anything wrong. I hired this boat, the SS Toronto, and I specified I would put cargo on it. I'm willing to give you more cargo. I'm ready to do my part of the deal. Your boat is lost. You can't fulfill your part of the deal. So that's your fault. So even if I paid you already, I should get my money back. So he could say, he could say, you give me the boat, and I'll give you the mine, and then I'll pay you for it. So you should get paid, even though I'm still willing to fulfill this obligation. Can't be. And this is the important case, so pay specific attention. Rather, the case must be where the boat was not specified, right? So I hired this captain to bring a boat, not specifying, and on his boat, he's going to bring specific cargo, these 8 barrels of wine. Imlo nasan amai lo yitain. If he didn't give him the money, why shouldn't he still give him the money? He should say, look, I am ready to do the job. I'm here. I'm willing to bring another boat. That says Montreal, exactly. But your wine is lost. That's your fault. You said I was supposed to bring this wine. The wine is gone. Okay, so give me more wine. And I'm willing to bring your cargo. So I should lose out on my salary because you can't complete this business transaction? Doesn't make any sense. Amar Rapavos, Rapavos says, no, here's the case. Lo mishkacha sa'al b'sfina zu v'yayin zeh. So the case is they both can't fulfill the deal, right? So it was specified that these 8 barrels of wine will be brought on SS Toronto and will be transported from, I don't know, from Toronto to Buffalo. And that was the agreement. Neither of them now can fulfill the agreement. Amar b'sfina stam v'yayin sam. If neither side of the agreement was specified, chulkin. So then we split the money. So, drawing back this case, this second case, the Svina Stam V'Yayinze, what do we have? Essentially, the workers are saying we could still do our job. And the Gemara says they get paid even though they didn't complete their job, number one. And it was seemingly no fault of the employer. Like, it's not his fault that a storm came midway through the day. and sunk the ship. He didn't do anything wrong. It just happened. And yet, we are requiring the employer to pay the employees. Seemingly in a case where neither of them should have foreseen this circumstance, or at least none of them was at fault. So take a look at source number 9. Okay? It says Tosos. Sakasha. Ask Tosos, why pay them at all? So Tosos is assuming here that they get paid, the captain of the SS Toronto gets paid for his entire journey. Let's say the agreed upon sum was, $10,000 to travel all the way from Toronto to Buffalo. So you get paid all $10,000. The question is why? Why should he pay them for the second half of the journey that he didn't even go? Even like a idle worker. Since it was an extenuating circumstances. Right, we said in a previous Gemara, our Gemara we just read, that in a case where there's an ones, there's an extenuating circumstance, and the worker is incapable of completing the work, that the poalim lose out, the workers lose out. Umashma la'el, d'chol ones she'ira la'balabayah, shelo ha'yalaleda yoter min ha'polim, havi p'seid ha'polim. Any case where they're on equal footing, they're both equally liable or equally not negligent in foreseeing this circumstance, the poalim lose out. Why here do the workers get paid? I get paid for my second half of the journey, the whole fare, even though I didn't complete the job. I didn't bring the cargo all the way. In fact, it was lost. Right? In this case, the employer isn't even getting anything. He loses his cargo. He doesn't get anything from it, yet he still has to pay the workers. Seems not to make any sense. So Tosos here answers an interesting distinction. Okay, so the question is going to be, is this rule challenged? Do we ultimately say no? It's not 100% clear that the employer always has the upper hand. Maybe sometimes the employee has the upper hand. Maybe we have to sort of change our conclusion. So Tosos here says not really. This is the Rivan. Look at the bottom of source. Now material Rivan del el shall polim lo ivdu klum rakshin is batlu ain no sin lahem klum. Now, there's a difference between this case and the case before. In the previous case, you hire workers. What do they ultimately lose by going to your house or your field and not doing anything? What do they lose?
Day of work.
A day of work. They lose a day of salary. They don't lose any money. They didn't lose anything. It's not like they had property that got lost or they spent some money and that's now worthless. They lost a day of work. So then that's why in a case of ones, you didn't lose to begin with. We're just talking about whether or not I have to pay you. So then they don't get paid. Aval hachasha masker hifsit svinoso. Here, the worker, in this case, the renter, who rented out his boat, he lost his boat. It's very sad. He lost his boat. What a horrific circumstance. Kilboa batel mia isle. He at least gets paid like an idle worker. I mean, he doesn't get paid the full amount that somebody who brings cargo on a boat, he has to schlep it on the boat, you have to bring the boat across the sea. So you don't get the full salary, but at least you get paid like an idle worker for that time period. Okay.
It's a good question. I guess according to Tosos, there's no difference between a security yeoman and a kaplan, because this guy's more like a
kaplan. Ah, very good point. I was going to pose that, actually. Tosos does not make that distinction. Now, once you're mentioning it, why do you think there would be a distinction? Shouldn't it make a difference? Again, just to clarify, essentially, there are two types of workers. There are people who are hired by day at a timely rate, that your job is to work for me today, and they get paid based on how much they work. That's called a schir yom, often referred to as a poel. And there are also workers that are called a kablan. It's more like a contractor, where you're not paid per hour, but you're paid based on the work that you actually do, paid by the job. Okay, so here, what the case is a kablan, right? What you're not being paid seemingly per day, how much time you spend transporting the cargo. You're being paid to transport the cargo. Now, should that make a difference?
I would have thought it might make a difference because the skill is paid to do something on a particular day, and if you can't do it on that day, due to circumstances beyond everybody's control, maybe he doesn't get paid. You know what I mean? But
a kablan
is paid for the ultimate result. Who says if it's neither person's fault, that he shouldn't get paid at all.
I guess you could say the opposite also. If he's paid for the ultimate result.
Or you could say the opposite.
Right. Yeah, you could say, well, if he's paid for the ultimate result, right. I mean, at least I'm paid for
it. You could say the opposite, but it didn't work the same.
Right, I hear. And you're right. In fact, that is one suggestion noted in source number 12. And actually, Riva takes it a little further. But that is one suggestion. And just at first glance, it's hard to necessarily argue that. You could even say the opposite. At least the Schir Yom, I came to work today.
Right.
I put in my time, and I owed you time. Right. Here, by the Kavan, you could say, look, your job was to transport the cargo. You didn't. Sorry. not much to say about that.
I won't even pay for the first half.
Okay, so yeah.
I got nothing.
The only, am I wrong? The only one that said Cholkin is Rapapa. Is that right? Anybody else say Cholkin?
So Rapapa is talking about a specific case.
But whatever.
Okay,
that,
yeah.
That methodology of, has anybody else, these questions are all over the place.
Right.
They argue them till the cows come home. And is he the only one who said Cholkin?
Only one who said Hogan? Yeah, I believe you are correct so far, and
okay.
I guess it,
well,
yes.
Well, if he is, I think that should be looked at a lot more, because these arguments are all over the place. They all have some merit, and non-merit, and there's so many aspects to this that maybe the only thing to do is Hogan, like we have in some other,
right.
You know, Shnayim Oichsen or whatever, I don't know.
Right, well, you know, it's a good question why in our case we don't say Cholkin. The downside of Cholkin always is that you're essentially not getting it right either.
You're not
if the Poel is correct or the employer is correct, neither of them are getting their money back.
But the arguments are
unless you say they equal merit.
I mean,
right.
The arguments are all over the place.
I mean, the thing I'm missing here, and it's probably just my own lack of clarity because I haven't been in the sugya all week, but is the answer to the fundamental question. Are we finding somebody for a responsibility, or are we saying you just didn't do the job and therefore you can't get paid? In the event that the issue is finding for responsibility, Cholkin may make sense when there's blame to go around.
Right. Right.
It's you're not cheating anybody. It's not a compromise. It's this is what you owe because you were responsible. This is what you owe because you were responsible.
Right. Right. I think, well, finding for responsibility might be the logic behind why a worker would get paid even if he didn't do his job. Meaning, essentially, you cost them a day of work. It's a fine type of damage.
Well,
type
if
of damage.
Damage, then that rule of fine does not apply, correct?
Right, that's true. Okay. But I think the other argument, though, is that, you know, I don't necessarily have to do the work to get paid. You could say I have to do everything I can and do the due diligence to be ready to do the work. And if, you know, I do that, maybe that in itself should require a payment. But your good point is a good one. I think you had different types of yachlok. You have yachlok misafik, where we just don't know who's right. Or you have yachlok bevada, where they're both right. And it would seem by not suggesting yachloku, the Gemara is saying that is not the case here. It's not that we don't know who's right or that they're both right. It's that the employer is right.
These arguments can go back and forth.
I hear you. It's a good point. Either way, so the Rivan is the one that says here that really the employer is always right, except this is sort of, the way I understand this is that it doesn't really fundamentally change the circumstance. It seems to me that when we decide who wins out, we have to sort of take into account all the different considerations and who's really losing out, and how much are they losing out, and in the grand scheme of things, since this person lost his boat, and that's a very unfortunate circumstance, so Chazal was saying at least you could do is at least pay him for his labor. I don't find any particular compelling logical reason to distinguish between these two cases based on this Rivan. It doesn't seem to me that there's anything fundamentally different. It's just we feel bad for the guy. He lost his boat.
The guy lost his cargo.
I guess we could ask if the cargo was more expensive than the boat. Yeah. Then maybe that would be a good consideration. But it doesn't seem to me that Rivan is making any fundamental distinction.
Right.
Okay, just to know, if you look at source 10 without looking at inside, the Rush basically says that the question is not a good question because you're understanding the Gemara wrong. The Rush says, you know, he's so impressed by our Gemara, which says, and he's the one, if you remember, in source 5 that said, yes, the employer has the upper hand. So he says, our Gemara is not discussing whether or not the boat owner gets paid for the entire journey. Again, remember, he sailed his boat halfway across the ocean. and then it sunk. So the rush says he's certainly not going to get paid for the half of the journey he didn't make. That is off the table because we decide with the employer it's a case of ones. Rather, we're discussing, does he even get paid for the first half of the journey?
You could be chulik on that too.
Right.
Get a quarter.
Okay, and maybe that's what we do. Maybe that's what we do. So
in today's age where people have insurance and he didn't lose anything necessarily at all.
According to Rivon, that might be
or unions.
They're getting paid for the journey, not for the price of the car.
We have pity on him because he lost his
I
boat,
think for the Rivon, it's a right.
We have a different halacha.
It's interesting. It's hard to know. It's hard to know, and
he
to make
made more money on the sinking of his boat.
Right.
Don't cheer.
Yeah, it's a complicated.
Insurance raises all sorts of other complications that you have to look into, but it's really a third party reimbursal. It's not an achrayus. Yeah, there's a lot.
So therefore, he could end up actually making double dividend.
Okay, we'll talk about insurance for a time.
No, the insurance will refuse to pay because the halacha
didn't
get
money. You know, it's not
like
right. So that is really Rivon, and now the Rosh is saying, okay, the whole thing's wrong. However, we do have some more fundamental distinctions in the Rishonim. So if you look at source number 11. The Rivah picks up on this idea that maybe the type of employment agreement an employer is relevant in this case, and it actually relates back to a previous Rivah, and he says as follows. If you look at source number 11, so it says the e amrinon the e da amrle sfinas stam v'yayin zeh imlo nasan amayal yitein lo. Right, he's quoting the Gemara here that if it was a case where it was the unspecified boat and specified cargo, so then the employer should have to pay the boat owner. Vafilu kol scharo, all of his salary. Share mezumenhu lashlim to'o v'kablanu so. Because the employer is ready to do the job. V'chivon she'in ha'ikva mitido, chayav lo b'kol scharo. And since what is withholding this agreement from going to fruition is not the fault of, or not coming from the side of the boat owner, he gets paid everything. And here's the key line. Dechi amrinam seda de polim, dafka poel o kablan de alma. That when do we say that the workers lose out? That is only a normal hired worker or contractor, a kablan. Shalo niskar el bedibor ba alma, that was only hired through a verbal agreement. Ava kablan chenes chayev legami leholek davri yadua, a kablan who a contractor, and in this case, who is completely obligated to transport a certain object, ola sozer, to do a certain thing, umashach hadavar, and he moved it. He did a kinyan on this agreement. Vaday kol she'en ha'ikva mitzido v'irabo shemones ein lo lahaskin mischaro klum. As long as there was nothing from his side preventing the transaction from taking place, And something happened preventing it, then he doesn't lose any money. So the Rivah is essentially saying, if you, and it goes back to Mashach. Mashach is a Kenyan.
Oh, that's what he means.
And I believe you look earlier in the Rivah, he explicates the word Kenyan. I just brought, but the Rivah actually, he's quoting his Rebbe here, the Ra'ah. And this, if you remember, I think in our first year in, the Rivah says that there is a big, big difference between a verbal agreement and an actual Kenyan. And that a verbal agreement, even according to the Rifa, and especially according to the Rifa, if you remember, brings with a certain amount of weight. It's an agreement. There's honesty at stake. And we are relying on each other to follow through on the agreement. And that in and of itself is binding. But that's only binding in terms of a responsibility of your money or your time. Whereas if you do a kinyan, then it is almost like buying an object. For instance, if I pay for your object and I do a real kinyan, and then all of a sudden something happens and the object gets blown up or something like that, I still got to pay you. Or if I give you money for an object and we do a kinyan, and then you feel bad, like, oh, I like that object, that sentimental value, you know, my daughter misses that thing in our house, doesn't matter, you did a kinyan. So essentially, if I do a kinyan, you owe me money for doing work for you. You have an obligation to pay me. It's done. The agreement has been clinched. And in that case, even in the case of ones, you have to pay me. And the flip side is also true. The Rifa says that even in a case of ones, if the worker can't come to work, he causes a loss to the employer in such a case, he has to pay the employer for that, even though it wasn't his fault. So essentially, Rebbe is saying that there are levels of commitment here. A verbal commitment results in a certain obligation, but a kinyan makes this to a completely different level. It's where you owe the person your work, you owe it to him, like you would owe someone money for getting an object for them, buying an object from them, and they owe you payment, as if you pay them already for that object. And therefore, that's the case here. The case is specifically, and he says this is what boat owners do, they made a kinyan, and once the person who rented the boat gets on the boat or is mosheichet, it clinches the deal, and that is why it's different. Whereas, and normally in the parak, we're discussing a verbal agreement, and that's when the rules of ones change. So that would be the Reva. Just to note, most of the Rishonim, the Shah argues on this Reva, argue and they say there's no difference in Schiris Polim. It's a different category. You can't buy work the same way you would buy a product. And therefore, even if there is a Kinyon, the rules do not change. However, this is the opinion of the Reva, B'Shem Rabo, the Ra. Yeah.
He says only Kavlan. Would that be the same Schir Yom if he has an actual Kinyon?
That is an interesting question. I would think that, I think it's more, it's an interesting question. I mean, the Riva at the beginning of the Perek does say that the same is true by Schir Yom. I think that this is just more relevant, that like he's talking about a Kavlan because that's what you're doing, you're transporting cargo. It would be interesting to see if you could distinguish. So I would think it's the same, but I guess I'm open to the possibility of it being different if you could prove that. So that is the Riva. The Gos Mamonios, so the Gos Mamonios is bothered by Pesach Rabbeinu Yoel HaLevi. Take a look at source 12. So Mikam Pesach Rabbeinu Yoel HaLevi, this is the Ravya. Tasocher milah milivno u'misatinuk. If a person hires a teacher for his son, and the child, lo alinu, passes away, the nosin lo kol scharo, you still have to pay him completely. And this is it's for whatever reason, the most practical cases discussed by the Rishonim from these Gemaras are always the case of Malami. You have lots of cases of someone hiring a teacher or a tutor to teach their students, and the kid gets sick, or the teacher wants to back out, or the kid isn't behaving well. You have all sorts of discussions in the Rishonim about what do you do in those circumstances. So this was a case where you hired a teacher, and really, unfortunately, that the kid passed away. So now what happened? So he says you got to pay him. The matzihal the memar hamalamid I see brach valamdenu hanak in it, right? It's like our case where you specify the guy says I'm ready to teach. You said I would teach your son. You know, it's not very sensitive, but you said I would teach your son. Once bring me your son and then I'll teach him. I mean, I imagine you wouldn't actually say that, hopefully, but that's the argument. The argument is I'm ready to do my job, just like the case of the Svina. Hey, you said you were bringing this cargo. I'll bring another boat. Let's do it. So it's not my fault. So he says, no, nearly. So the Hagos Maimonio says that. No, can't be. And he says it's a problem. What if the kid gets sick? Based on our Gemara, if the kid normally wouldn't get sick, meaning it was an irregular occurrence, right? The teacher should have said, you know, if your kid gets sick, this will be the deal. I'm going to get paid. And since he didn't do that, so he loses out. So the Ravya says in a case where the child is sick and therefore is incapable of learning and they can't and the Malami can't teach him, so then the Ravya agrees that he's not going to get paid because he should have said, if your child gets sick, still pay me. And he didn't. And could it be that in a case the kid dies, then you will get paid? Like, that seems very counterintuitive. That's no more. He certainly should have stipulated then. That's much less foreseeable. So he doesn't understand Rabbeinu Yoel. But then how do you distinguish between our case, where you have this boat, and the boat owner says, hey, look, I'm ready to bring the cargo. Just give it to me. I'm ready to go. And the case of the Tinok. And the case of the child who passes away, and the teacher says, well, I'm ready to teach your child. He says, "Yesh lechalik el ayri b'schiras v'hacha bekablanos." No, here's the difference. The difference is that the teacher. So we give. This is the second answer he gives, by the way, is that the case of the boat is a case of kablanos. It's a case where you're doing a specific job. And he's arguing that in the case of kablonos, actually the employee has more of a claim to getting paid even though there is an onus. Whereas the case of our workers in our Gemara, and also the case of a teacher, and the most Rishonim argue that a teacher, although he is hired to teach specific material, since you're paid by the hour, right, so you have the status of Schir Yom, and therefore, since it's a Schir Yom, in the case of onus, the Schir Yom will not get paid. So why is this, right? This is what you raised before. Why would there be a difference? I think what we discuss either next time or soon, which is that there are two things to say about a kablan. On the one hand, it would seem to be outcome-based. And you could argue that since, you know, you hire me to fulfill, it's almost a result that's important. That's the perspective you could add. You hire me to get the job done. It's not about you working or putting in any time. I want my suit back dry cleaned. When you do it, how you do it, where you do it, how long it takes, doesn't matter. I'm paying you for the dry cleaning of the suit. So you could have argued that if it's not dry cleaned, then I'm not paying you. But I think the argument that the Ghost Maimonides is making is that being said, there is a unique connection between the kablon and the job agreement. Meaning, as opposed to Schir Yom, who's essentially agreeing to work for you for a day, and there's the particular task is less relevant. He's not kone any specific agreement. It's just, I have to work for you. The kablon, in agreeing to the specific task and being ready to do it, has sort of a kinyan on that task. Meaning, I have gained the right to get paid for this job, given that I am ready to do it. The job itself is sort of what the kablon is focusing on. It's the task at hand. And I am ready to do that task. For a certain, you won't be ready to do a task, okay, but like it's about you putting in effort and doing it. But I am ready to do the task. And it's not my fault that you are not ready to pay me for it. So since there's that unique connection between the job and the kablon, what I imagine that Ghost Maimonides is arguing is that he will indeed get paid. Yeah. I don't like that.
We haven't mentioned Kinyan Abdus, right?
Okay, good. Yes.
Isn't the poel really a Kinyan Abdus, but only for a limited time?
That
was what I wanted to do in the intro. All right, we're gonna get. To
hopefully,
the question.
Yeah.
We'll come up with
yeah.
The
It's a big question. And it is relevant to this Gemara also, as you see that the owner sort of has a right to just ask him to do another job,
right.
Even though that was yes, definitely
job.
A relevant question,
right.
and it touches on a lot of things. Okay, so as Rosh Hashanah, we'll get to that. So that is the answer of the Hagos Maimonios. The Maharal. So first when I saw this Maharal, I was like, wow, there's a Chidushei Maharal on Gemara. That's awesome. I love that. But the Maharal, in addition to just having Chidushei Mahamba Mitzia, he says an interesting take here. And the way that, according to the Maharal, we're taking a step back for a second. In terms of, is the employer or employee responsible? Who has the upper hand? So I think what we've seen, though, so far, is that the Rush is saying employer, employer, employer. And just don't take into consideration it's not the case. It's not what you think, right? Tosfos, I think, also is agreeing that generally it's the employer has the upper hand, meaning you get paid for doing a job. You don't do the job, I'm sorry, but I'm not going to pay you. Unless it's a specific circumstance where, look, you lost your boat, and all things being considered, and you were ready to do the job, and it wasn't your fault, so then we'll at least award you, although you're losing, we'll award you your payment for the job. So the Ghost Maimonios and the Ritva say it depends on the type of worker and the nature of the agreement, that some agreements have more teeth to them and some types of workers have greater rights. The Maharal says that our conclusion based on this first Gemara is really wrong. That we should not have concluded based on our first Gemara that in all cases the employer has the upper hand. And he says, well, there's one thing that in this case is relevant, which is that they specified in the agreement, this boat or this cargo, and one side is ready to complete the agreement. I mean, when we make an agreement, and I agree to work on your property, so if you don't have the ability to provide me with that work on your property, that's why things change. So take a look at source number 13. She says, Hikshu b'tosvos. Maral says, Tosa asks the question, D'la'el mucha'checha da'socher anos havi p'seid de'polim. Beforehand, in our Gemara on Ayin Zayin, we proved that In a case where there is an ones, an extenuating circumstance, the workers lose out. Lafi daiti ein zukasha klal. He says, this is not difficult at all. It's not even a question. And I think when he says ein zukasha klal, he's saying it's the wrong conclusion. That wasn't the conclusion based on the previous Gemara. Dila el hachi hecha de asi mitcher hari ba'abayis yomer hari lefanecha kamosha oisa kasher sacharti yischen. Right? Before, the Baal Bayis can say, it rained. A Baal Bayis said, you're going to do work on my field. And even, let's say he even specifies the field. And he says, look, my field is here. Okay, it rained, but I provided you with a field to do work on it. It's not my fault that it rained. I provided you with everything I agreed to provide you with. V'amatar sheba mali lasos. The rain that came, what should I do? Here's my field. Shalilo nashana klal. My property didn't change at all. Kihai gav nahavib seyed depolin. Then the loss is on the workers. V'afilu hechi desachar polin lahashkos zeyev asa mitra. And let's say the next case of the Gemara, where it's that he hired the workers to irrigate his field, and it rained, and the work was no longer necessary because the field's already been irrigated. Hare yomar v'abaya sedesh shalilo nashana. My field didn't change. I gave you the field to work. Let's take a look at the next page. Actually, but there's rain in the field. Okay, I gave you the field to work. It just doesn't need any work. Here, the wine has been sunk. It's gone. He's not giving him the wine that he stipulated to work on, to transport. We don't say in this circumstance that the workers lose out. So the Maharal is essentially saying here that the conclusion is wrong, that it's not that the workers have the upper hand. The question is, which parties can say that they are living up to their side of the agreement? Meaning, instead of reading Ayin Tes in light of Ayin Zayin, he's reading Ayin Zayin in light of Ayin Tes. What's important here is which party can say, I am ready to do what I agreed to do. You come through with your side of the agreement, and then I'll do the work or I'll pay. In the case of Ayin Zayin, the agreement was, I am going to provide you a field to work on, and what I'm required to do is to provide you a field. And I did that. In the case on Ayin Tes, I have to provide you this cargo. I said Yain Zeh, and that's why I lose out. So what the Maharal is essentially doing is saying that really it's much more equal footing than we thought. It's not this idea of Hamotz Mechamel Avaraya is not applicable to this case. Rather, they both have a certain hold on the case. The Poel did what he was supposed to do. He came to work. That in and of itself is a kinyan. And he should get paid, provided that he's ready to do the work. And the Baal Bayis is not ready to provide him the work they agreed to do. So essentially, what we have here, I think, is that different perspectives here on the Rishonim on who has the upper hand. Essentially, what does a worker get paid for? Right? We have one school of Rishonim that are essentially saying that really a worker gets paid for doing the job. And that ultimately, even in an extenuating circumstance, even if you show up and ready to do the job, unless the hirer was negligent, or you really lost a lot of money or something like that, you don't get paid because, you know, you didn't do the job, ultimately. But you have other Rishonim who are saying that no, that it really either depends on the type of worker or the nature of the agreement, or essentially, it's not that the employer has the upper hand. The Maharal suggesting is really it depends who is more in position to fulfill their side of the argument. So next week, what we'll talk about is a flip side again, focusing on why do you get paid? What if the job is done for you, right? Vignette number two. You come to work, you're ready to go, and then they don't need you anymore. In which cases do we say the worker gets paid anyway, and in which cases do we say that the worker does not end up getting paid? Thank you very much.
Two notes. First of all, Shir on Tuesday is at 10 a.m. It's 10 to 11 on Erev Yom Kippur, and it'll be in the small base Midrash.